Live, the Sports Hub, where Toucher and Rich, Danny Ainge, is president of basketball operations for the Boston Celtics and is brought to you by GE. GE is creating game-changing solutions and advanced analytics for peak performance on the parquet. GE, the exclusive data and analytics partner of the Boston Celtics. Danny Ainge, hello.
Good morning.
It's we're doing it the best we can, my friend. That's what we're doing.
Early wake up call for you guys today.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, 6 o'clock. That's pretty early.
Yeah, not for grinders like you and I, Danny. We had to rise and grind. You know what I'm saying?
Understand.
We're just a bunch of lunch pail guys. You know, put on the hard hat and get to work.
Nice.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, you seem to be in great spirits.
Well, I want to start this by asking you about, you did an interview just recently with Steve Bulpet of the Boston Herald. I thought it was interesting because he asked you about 2013 and Giannis Antetokounmpo, and that year was the year that you guys traded up to get Kelly Olynyk. And obviously, you know, there's a lot of players that no one expects to become as great as they end up being. And Giannis Antetokounmpo is, you know, obviously one of the best guys. He's one of the best players in the NBA right now. Why did you, because you were talking about why you passed him up. Once again, what was the thing, like, was he on your list of if this guy's taken, like if Kelly Olynyk was taken, how far down was Giannis Antetokounmpo, or was he completely off of your draft board?
No, he wasn't off of our draft board. He was in the range. You know, in that range, he was an interesting prospect. We just felt like he would take longer than he actually did. I think his growth, physical growth and strength and, you know, just was shocking how much better he got and how fast he got that good. What a terrific player he is.
So the size was the thing that turned you off? Because I know that, you know, he was a lot skinnier than he is now. Was that one of the main things that made you think that he wasn't going to become the star as fast as he was, is because he hadn't bulked up yet?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody could have seen that he was going to become what he is. Otherwise, he would have been the number one pick in the draft, right?
So sure.
I think that he was very, very thin. But he did have a good feel for the game, and he did have a good energy about him. I mean, he really enjoys playing basketball, and I think all those characteristics and is just the physical presence that he has now, and all those things remain where he loves to play basketball. He seems like a great attitude.
And it's, you know, there's a lot of times where I'm sure you look back and you just didn't have the information. Sometimes you don't know how well some of these players are going to get. You know, it's kind of a surprise to a lot of people. But is there one player that, looking back during all your drafts, that you said, man, I can't believe I didn't pick that guy? Like, I should have seen that one coming.
Well, I mean, Giannis has to be up there, but, you know, I think that looking back, a guy that we saw evaluated 100 times that we didn't pick was Jimmy Butler, and we knew everything about him, but never believed that he was going to be a, you know, a superstar or a perennial all-star in the NBA, but we really, really liked him, and it was a really tough choice, but that's one that I regret.
Okay. I'm trying to remember what year that was. Who did you guys end up taking instead of Jimmy Butler that year? I'm trying to remember.
Juwan Johnson. We had a lot of wings. We had a lot of Jimmy. We had a lot of people at that position, and we needed size and length, and Juwan Johnson was a 22-point scorer at Purdue, defensive player of the year 2 years, and he just didn't pan out because of, you know, he just wasn't strong enough. Yeah, Jimmy was really good in the combine camps and good in workouts. And, that was one that I've regretted many times.
Well, one guy you did draft that at the time, there were a lot of people who were handing out, like, bad grades. I know that even our own Adam Jones, I think, was broadcasting from there.
Unless it's was Lipschatz. It's, right.
And it seems to be that you've proven them all wrong now. Terry Rozier, who has his emergence this season has been something special, and he's going to have to be the guy that leads this team into the playoffs, it looks like, because just as far as I know, unless you have new news on it, you're not going to have have Marcus Smart or Kyrie Irving for the first round. How confident are you in Terry Rozier leading this team as the point guard going into that first round?
Yeah, I'm very confident. I mean, Terry's going to give you a great effort every night. I mean, he's going to make and miss shots like most players up and down, but he's shot the ball so much better. But he's just one of the great competitors in our league. And I'm very excited about Terry.
Any updates about Marcus Smart or Kyrie Irving? Matter of fact, the last I've heard is that second round earliest for both guys. Has anything changed since we spoke with you last?
No, nothing's changed. You know, we're still evaluating those guys, but no, I do not anticipate them being available in the first round.
Danny, watching your team play over the last couple of weeks, are you able to learn anything about how they will perform in the playoffs? Obviously, struggled on offense. The defensive effort was there last night. Shots just didn't go down. But with all the players you have out, I mean, does that give you any window into how your team will perform in round number one?
Not really. I mean, I think that I don't think that we were ourselves in the last two games. I felt like we played great on the West Coast road trip. We came back and we were, you know, really ready and in tune for Milwaukee, and then we, you know, head right back. Or I'm sorry, for Toronto, and we head right back out on the road again on a back-to-back. And I think that in Milwaukee, I felt like we looked tired. You know, our heads were dropping a little bit when things weren't going well. I haven't seen that in our team for a while. But no, I think that we're trying to get through the regular season, trying to get healthy, and I can't wait for the playoffs. I think it's going to be really exciting.
How much do you think your offense has been limited over the last 2 weeks, month, 6 weeks, because of all the injuries, people in, people out? You're never sure what combinations you're going to have. You had one game in Milwaukee without any point guards. I mean, where do you think your offense is as a result of all of this?
Well, I think that offense is the hardest to find in the NBA, especially closing offense. And what's been the most surprising is that we've been able to close games in a great fashion against some of the top teams, it's Oklahoma City, you know, at Portland, at Utah, the best defensive team in the league. You know, we have had our struggles periodically throughout the game, but we've been able to finish games and close games strong with, you know, a subpar offense. And, you know, defense has got to be our calling card, and we have to score enough. And we've been shooting the ball well up until the last couple games, and I'm confident that we're going to be that team that is at our best, where we're making shots and our defense is locked in. And I think the playoffs are going to be a lot of fun.
All right, Danny, Brad Stevens' name has been mentioned all over the place regarding Coach of the Year. Do you think he deserves that?
Absolutely, I do. Yeah, he's done a magnificent job with, you know, we were really excited coming into this year, obviously, with Gordon Hayward, Kyrie, Daniel Tice, Jason Tatum, a lot of really fun things and exciting things happening this year. And just to keep the team together and to have the kind of year that we've had, and then, you know, losing Kyrie late and Daniel Tice and Marcus Smart before the All-Star break, and then to come out of the All-Star break and we're fairly healthy except for Gordon. And then just go on a great run and then lose Marcus and Daniel and shortly thereafter Kyrie. I think Brad has just done a great job of keeping the spirits up of the players and keeping us in this thing in a pretty good position.
Do you feel with the team that he's going to have going into the first round, obviously with, you know, all the injuries, do you believe it would be, or do you feel it would be a disappointment if they lost in the first round?
I think that the players, you know, like I don't look at it that way, rarely ever predict, you know, it just depends who we play and how did we play. And but yeah, I think our team would be disappointed losing in the first round.
Don't be so hard on yourself.
but it is a strange situation going in. And Rozier, I know you've spoken with him, and Larkin has been excellent as well. Which player this season, when you look at them, do you think has probably surprised you the most as far as their growth?
You know, obviously Rozier, and I would say both the young wings, Brown and and Tatum. You know, they, from the very beginning of the season, they've been good, and they just keep getting better and better. And I've been very excited about their futures.
Okay, so there was the video that came out with Gordon Hayward jogging. What did you think of that video?
I don't know. Listen, I see Gordon every day. Mm-hmm. He's working extremely hard. I think it was a big moment just to get out on the court, but, you know, they're... Gordon feels like he's being held back.
Really?
So he wants to do more, but you're telling him no.
I'm just joking about that, of course. But, I mean, he just wants to go and go and go. And, you know, obviously when he tries to, you know, just do a little bit more than he should, he realizes and has all the trust in our guys. But, yeah, he's just biting at the bit to, you know, to sprint and be playing one-on-one and doing stuff, but he's been patiently going about his work. It's been very impressive to watch.
What do the six guys with the iPads do while he's doing those really weird drills?
Yeah, and why does he have to step in the circle?
A lot of weirdness. It was a strange video.
Yeah, so I haven't watched the videos, but yeah, they're measuring lots of different things. They're you know, just measuring output in his good leg and his bad leg, and measurements of, you know, the size and muscle and strength and flexibility and range of motion and everything in both feet, just to make comparisons.
Okay, there's a difference between someone like saying they're ready to play and someone realistically being ready to play. Has he at any point said to you, "I'm ready"?
No, he's not. I mean, he can't run on the basketball court. You know, I mean, he can go stand in the corner and shot.
Well, does he really need to run?
That's right. Could you just kind of, I mean, look, you had
could
a coach.
He just cherry pick?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, maybe we could use him to throw the ball in from out of bounds on the last second play or something like that.
Well, you might have to move laterally to do that.
You know, Korver's not the fastest guy in the world, but he was fairly effective in the playoffs, you know, tossing the ball. But just get him to the right place and throw him the ball. Have him chuck it up.
Yeah, we'll probably not do that this year.
Not a very smart play.
Guy at our station, Dan Lifshatz, has it on good authority that you are going to deal for Kawhi Leonard in this offseason.
Oh, good authority, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. He's bad in about 1,000.
That just means somebody that thinks they know what they're talking about told Dan.
No, Dan is a degenerate gambler. But
it's not good authority.
Well, listen, he has inside sources. This is how he wins his bets.
Nice.
All okay, right. Well. So this is any updates, anything health wise with anybody else? Because I mean, once again, we're just all sitting here crossing our fingers, waiting. More than anything, I think Celtics fans just want them to get past the first round, and then there's at least the hope that you're going to get some of the stars back.
Yeah. So you know, we're all sitting there with our fingers crossed, hoping things go well. It's I just don't know. I mean, we're grinding it out. We're getting evaluations. We're doing therapies. But I don't really have any more information this morning. No, hopefully maybe next week we will.
All right. Well, Danny Ainge, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and maybe next week you finally spill the beans at Hayward's playing, and we always appreciate that.
All right, guys. Good talking to you.
All right, see nice you, man.
In your car at 98.5. On your phone on the new Sports Hub app. And on your computer. 98.5 thesportshub.com. Toucher and Rich. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. And Rich, there is information coming out about Zdeno Chara. We know that he... from a young age, was stretched out by his wrestling. I believe his father was an Olympic wrestler.
He was. Zdenek Chara. Yeah.
And yes. He would take him into his shed, like in the back, and put him through his paces. We know that Zdeno typically wins all the fitness challenges. We know when he was younger that he would go and ride his bike and follow the course of the Tour de France, which people think is the most... brutal of all sporting events.
What's more impressive to you, Fred? Tom Brady at his age, playing as well as he is, or Zdeno Chara at his age and at his size, playing as well as he's playing?
I don't. Brady probably, because hockey goes one of two ways.
either they're 18 or they're like 55. So, I mean, there are guys that have played in well into their 40s.
82 games of getting hit. And think about it, too, just without even playing a sport where people are hitting you constantly, just being a person of his size and not breaking down. Think about that. I mean, all of these like mammoth basketball players that you hear just after like several years playing the sport, they just can't do it anymore because they're so big. Now you've got Zdeno Chara, who is having an unbelievable year. I mean, he's found the fountain of youth this year. And Sports Illustrated sat down with him, and they went to his place in the North End, and they started talking about this folder that he has. They're one of many folders, but the interviewer sits down with him, and he opens it up. They say it's an otherwise nondescript piece of office supply, dark blue, two pockets, letter size, but should serve it as collector's item. He said visitors would see a sheets of scrap paper, some already yellowing from age. They would look at the calendars and charts penciled in a blend of English, Slovak, and inscrutable shorthand that spills into the margins. He says, here is the gist, decoded and translated. For almost three decades now, the 41-year-old Bruins defenseman has meticulously cataloged every single one of his off-season workouts. Each exercise, each repetition, each kilogram. Curious how many pucks he shot on, say, August 31st, 2014? How long he spent on mountain biking July 17th, 1996? Those details are in that folder, protected by a plastic sleeve stashed above his desk in his family's combo office playroom. They said that they go start looking through the folder. He said, so that's 2017, 16, 15, 14, every day, everything that I did. And I have a whole bunch at home, too, in Slovakia. He said that's where his father, Zdenek, was an Olympic Greco-Roman wrestler for communist Czechoslovakia who later became the Slovak national team coach. He had Zdeno Chara, when he was a kid, swing a hockey stick encased in a flower pot of hardened concrete. So he would just, to keep him strong, he took at the bottom of it and put this giant weight at the end of his stick. And also, he said that he would perform shoulder raises with buckets of water that Zdeno pumped from a 13-meter-deep hand-dug well. So
what was that Van Damme movie where he's carrying that water
around?
It's
Rocky IV.
Yeah, it is. Right. He's working out in the barn. Yeah. You're absolutely
it's
right.
It's Rocky IV. They put him in the snow, and he has to carry
He said, but more than hard work, Zdeno's stressed working smart, and smart workers use journals. To this day, at the outset of each summer, Chara sits down and scripts his training sessions in month-long segments. I'm a thinker, he says. I like to do the work of preparation. When I start doing things, I like to already have a purpose. He begins with a basic workout calendar on the first page, then breaks down each workout into sets, reps, and weights on the second. The remaining pages, this is months ahead of time, the remaining pages are left blank to be filled in later with a running diary detailing how every exercise makes his body feel, each ache, each sore, each burst of energy, color-coded and organized chronologically since adolescence. You can easily figure out patterns of preparation this way. It's like a big puzzle. Stapled together, the documents create a roadmap. They explain how an overlooked, underdeveloped defenseman built himself into a six-time Norris Trophy finalist and a future Hall of Famer. And they're continuing to go on. They say he's obviously the second oldest. This is one of the best parts of it. So he's talking about how he wants to continue to clock more minutes. And right now his average ice time is it's almost 23 minutes. So he is tied right now with one other guy in the NHL for most ice time, it looks like. And he's the second oldest. There's one guy who's like a couple months older than him in the NHL. So he starts talking about how he wants to continue to keep his stamina up. And they say that this guy came and gave him like a presentation on how to do it. And it goes back to his early days. He goes, Nicholas continues. During the 2005-2006 season, in his last in Ottawa before signing with Boston, Chara proposed the Senators coaching staff with an unprecedented proposal. He wanted to play an entire game, 60 minutes. No joke, quote, he was serious about it for sure, former assistant Jan Paddock says. We all agreed that he could have done it. Do you know what the closest he came was, though? Like, the most amount of minutes that he ever played? Now, it was before he was a Bruin. He did it against Montreal.
32 minutes.
No.
34 minutes.
Yeah,
he had a 34-minute game. But he said his goal has always been to play an entire game and to not be exhausted by it.
Well, that's great. Good for him. You don't have to take a month off.
He said, They're talking about, like, they're, he goes, or they spot him at the Ottawa rink before training camp, decked in cycling gear and headed on a solo 60-mile ride.
Oh, he wears cycling gear?
Casual compared to the steep Tour de France stages that Chara biked for fun each summer. Quote, he's the reason I couldn't use my long arms as an exercise in the pull-up competition, Sean Thornton says. That got old real quick when Z was rattling off 35 of them at 270 pounds. He doesn't need a trainer or a coach yelling at him to get back in shape, says Andrew Ferentz. He's the opposite. He needs people to tug on his reins. Z, you're playing 28 minutes a night. We're in the playoffs. You don't need to go to the gym and have a full workout after the game. Consider, on the second day of a Bruins bye week in January, Miller received a call from Chara suggesting that they book ice time with Team Power skating coach Kim Brandvold to stay fresh. Quote, I don't like to sit around and do nothing. I like to keep getting better and staying in the rhythm.
No, it was working for him.
The dude's an absolute maniac.
So the idea is if you have kids, adolescent kids, take them out back and make them do a bunch of crap.
Have them climb mountains in the winter.
And then they'll become big NHL people. All right, Rich, we have the stat coming up. What will we talk about?
Oh, we got some more details on what's going on with the opening ceremony. We have the odds for the Masters. Tiger Woods, not the number one guy right now. I know that people freaked out when the odds first were released. He is not number one. And on top of that, we've got a little more Tiger Woods news. So we will get to all of that in just a moment.
Yes, the Masters are going on now. And the leaderboard is very exciting.
Yes.
It is very exciting. There is Ryan Moore right now is minus two through. He's birdied the first two holes.
Just bogeyed three, so he's at minus one. So
okay,
there you go.
Well, you are far more up to date than
it,
I,
man.
Sir.
I got it.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Kutcher and Rich.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Car number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line, 617-931-0985. We'll win a dozen Callaway Chrome Soft golf balls. The new Chrome Soft combines tour-proven performance with unparalleled feel, distance, and spin control. Chrome Soft, the ball that changed the ball.
And one of the wilder stories that broke yesterday, this is odd. Julian Edelman may have stopped a school shooting. So he was in Texas visiting Danny Amendola last month when he received a direct message on his Instagram account that said, quote, dude, there is a kid in your comment section that says he's going to shoot up a school. I think you should alert the authorities. So at that point, Julian Edelman notified his assistant in Boston, Shannon Moen. She looked through the hundreds of comments that followed Edelman's recent post on Instagram, and she found a message that said, quote, I'm going to shoot my school up. Watch the news. So his assistant called 911, and then a police officer soon arrived. The officer saw the screenshot, then called her chief, who sent detectives over to Moen's house, his assistant. The detectives collected some information about the person who posted the threat, and then they returned to their office, where they made an emergency records request for account information, and that allowed them to determine the sender's email and IP address, which was traced to Port Huron, Michigan. So the detectives called the police in Michigan, who immediately drove to the house where that message had originated. And when the police arrived at the address, they found a 14-year-old boy who they said admitted to posting the threat. They also found two rifles that belonged to his mother. Apparently, the boy's threat was aimed at the middle school that he attends in a nearby town. The boy was taken to a juvenile detention center where he remains. He was charged with making a false report of threat of terrorism, a felony that is punishable up to 4 years in jail. How creepy is that, man?
I would like to have an assistant that I could call and they could handle all my stuff.
That would be, I mean, it's like people don't realize that when you say things online, you can actually have real consequences for what you say. Like, you can't threaten somebody. As we know personally, you can't threaten somebody on Twitter or on Facebook. That's the same thing as doing it to their face.
That's why my documentary is going to be such a hit. I wish I had an assistant that you could just call up and they could do your bidding.
You could. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could hire one.
I don't have that kind of money.
To get an assistant?
What do you think an assistant is? 35 grand a year?
I would assume so. Unless that assistant is a family member. Unless you got like a brother who just needs cash.
I'm an only child.
Unless you got a Gronkowski next to you.
Yeah. So, what do you think Edelman needs an assistant for?
I mean, I would think that if you're somebody who has to do appearances and has endorsements, and
someone to drive a pop-up store.
Yeah, I have all those things.
He's probably of the level that, you know, if you've got the money, then sure, get an assistant.
But what do they do for him besides thwart school shooting?
And maybe his assistant is also his agent. Could be like,
No. It's an assistant. It's not his agent. It was his personal assistant.
I've heard of lesser. I mean, you know, he's a star. You know, he's a star.
I'm not. Listen, it's a great thing that he did. He could have thwarted his school shooting.
Oh, no. I understand what you're saying, but why do you need an assistant? I think somebody his size with a lot of stuff going on.
You don't have to attack how he's small for a receiver.
I know somebody who was Angelina Jolie's assistant for a while.
Really?
Yeah, she was actually one of her bridesmaids.
Well, I can understand that, why she would need an assistant.
Yeah.
She's got to keep the vial of her brother's blood around her neck or whatever the hell that was.
She was like an intern on the set of one of the movies, and they just became friends. And she said, I'll pay you more than what you're making here to be my assistant. And I think for like five years or so, she's a personal assistant.
You know, my man Jack in L.A. is Johnny Depp's assistant and used to be the manager of the Viper Room, which Johnny Depp owned. And every time we have someone on from that circle, I bring up Jack, and it's immediately that we have a connection.
and they know who it is. That's kind of cool.
Every time the Jackass guys are on.
Well, Johnny Manziel, he obviously didn't do well with the Browns, is now blaming the Browns for not realizing they were drafting a guy who prefers to wing it. He said on the Dan Patrick Show, quote, if Cleveland did any of their homework, they would have known that I wasn't a guy who came in every day and watched film.
Did you hear this?
I did not hear it.
Oh, it's so pathetic. I mean, it's so pathetic.
What do you mean?
The way he sounds, like he's just...
Oh, Manziel?
Like, yeah, it's...
Is he trying to be self-deprecating here? Is that what the deal is? Is he trying to be like, I'm better, that's not who I am anymore?
That's exactly what he's doing, but it seems incredibly staged.
Like, and he's been wanting to say this for a while?
Yeah, and I think Dan Patrick is the worst, but I know someone who has a special needs child that was obsessed with Dan Patrick, and they went to the studio, and he was, like, incredible to the kid. So now it's getting a little harder for me to dislike him that much. Even though he has the Danettes and the framed pictures of the swimsuit issues, and he's got a sign that says popsicles.
You can like him personally and dislike him, you know, work-wise. Yeah, you can do that.
I mean, he was very kind to this child, and I still can't wrap my... And the Danettes, I hate that. Well, I hate the whole thing.
Well, Manziel continues, goes, I wasn't a guy who really knew the X's and O's of football, which I think is fantastic. So Johnny Manziel, obviously people were like, well, what are you doing? Why the hell are you saying this? You're trying to get a job. And Johnny Manziel retweeted the Pro Football Talk article about it. He said, draft a quarterback in the first round and put him into a toxic quarterback room versus what it was like my second year with McCown. Completely different situations. It's all about the right fit, and mine in Cleveland wasn't right. See, isn't that because of you? You just admitted it was because of you. He says, that's just the facts. I also have nobody to blame for myself. You just blame somebody else.
You blame someone else.
You, literally, in the same tweet, you blamed the Browns organization.
Get off of Twitter, stupid.
And he said, take it how you want. I really don't care. I always feel some type of way. He said, at the end of the day,
you absolutely care. This is why you're doing all of this.
Well, I mean, you're contradicting yourself within the same tweet.
Right, but I just like that he doesn't care when he's going on a media tour and he's tweeting this stuff out. He's responding to Pro Football Talk on Twitter. That's exactly how he should be spending his time.
The Masters for the odds are now out.
Vijay Singh, by the way, teeing off at 9:36. He who puts Gatorade in his divots so he can measure exactly how big a divot he wants to put in.
Who was the guy, not Jack Nicklaus's grandson, who hit the hole-in-one yesterday and then broke his ankle?
No, that was a professional golfer.
Tony Finau.
He did not break his ankle.
Or what did he do?
He sprained it or twisted it.
By the way, when you jump up and your ankle rolls like that, you should be fine.
Yeah.
John and I talked about this off the air. He landed on the side of his foot.
He's playing, by the way.
I know he is.
And of course he is. Yeah.
because it's nothing. like people go, oh, it's so gruesome. That happens to me once a month.
It happens to everybody.
Everyone
who's ever tried to play a sport has had this happen before.
And like he hit the side of his foot.
But it hurts like a bitch for about 3 minutes.
And that's all
the video showed. The video showed not even 3 minutes, like maybe like the 30 seconds afterwards.
But the idea that it was like, oh, this guy crushed himself. He landed on the side of his foot. He's a pussy.
And then he fell. Slipped.
No, you don't fall. You just stand up. And he went
down to one knee and he's fine.
He kind of limped it off. I think he handled it well.
Nah. He even waved, like, I'm fine. I'm fine.
At least I like him because he has no ass like me.
It's just the legs go right into the back. That's called a shirt and leib.
Well, it's called a. Well, not everyone has an ass as supple as an apple you would find at the farm stand that you drive an hour to get to.
Dustin Johnson is your favorite right now. He is 8.5-1 odds. Then goes Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, and then Tiger Woods sitting there at 12-1 odds. This is
people must have bet very heavy on Tiger.
You got me. You got me, Masters. I'm going to be watching, and it's Tiger's the reason. Now I want to know.
It's teeing off in an hour.
Yeah.
Or maybe it would be the opposite of that. People weren't betting on Tiger.
Well, they were heavy at the beginning. He was the favorite a couple of weeks ago. Now he's not.
I have to get Lifshatz on the phone.
Good point.
Find out what's the insider source. Well, Steven Spielberg has been talking about the new Indiana Jones movie that he is going to make, and he
I can't wait to ignore this one too, man.
Well, he's got to be. This has to be good because it's almost got to be an apology for the Crystal Skull. Crystal Skull was so awful.
I think I only saw the first one. In the first one, if you watch it now, it was on TV the other day. It does not hold up.
Oh, you are out of your mind.
The first
one's amazing.
The first segment of the first one is one of the best scenes I've ever seen.
Without a doubt,
fantastic.
Are you kidding me? The whole scene with the Nazi chase at the end and the guy with the plane, dude, it holds up really well.
I liked it a lot.
And you know what? The horrible special effects at the end when the faces melt off are even creepier now.
Are you guys aware of the kids in California that at the time, before like the internet and everything, made a shot-by-shot?
Yeah, it's called Raiders. You can actually watch it right now. They did a recreation of Raiders of the Lost Ark as kids. Every single scene.
And then they recently finally did the plane scene that they wanted to do, and they got like a real plane. But that shows you how good it is that these jabroni kids can do it. Raiders of the Lost Nerd.
Okay. You got me.
They're like nine or something.
I loved it. I think.
Yeah, yeah. The first Indiana Jones holds up really well.
I liked it a lot. Second one was absolutely awful.
You're out of your mind.
I love
Temple of Doom. People rip on Temple of Doom.
Awful.
I love Temple of Doom.
Awful.
And the third one might be. Well, the first
third
the
one
best.
Is really
third one's
good.
Unbelievable.
Third one is good.
That's
fourth
why,
one is terrible.
That's why Crystal Skull was just such an atrocity. It was like
I was watching that movie and getting angry watching it. Angry
it's
watching the fourth one.
Enter this for your doom.
I think I was seven when that came out, and I remember seeing the scene where Molo Ram goes in and rips that dude's heart out and thinking it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen.
Yeah, but they had to go through an hour and a half of crap to get there.
I liked Indiana Jones when I was a kid, too. All right, does the original Star Wars hold up?
No, that one's slow at the beginning.
I like it, but it's very slow at the beginning.
Empire holds up. Jedi holds up.
You know what I don't like is any more of the Star Wars films. I liked them a lot when I was a kid. Obviously, I had all the toys and everything. But I tried to get my kids to watch one of the Star Wars, and they were out in like 5 minutes.
Oh, you see, my kids love it.
My kids did not make it through the first one. Lasted about 40 minutes.
Oh, you mean the first Star Wars?
The first original one.
Oh, yeah.
40 minutes, because it was new, it was different. You know, what are these guys? Second one, they sat and watched the entire time. Like that. The second one's one of the ones where, like, when we drive to Philadelphia for, like, Christmas, that's one of the movies we play on the DVD
system.
You
let the kids watch TV in the car?
Yes, we do.
Uh-huh. Good parenting.
How else do you keep them entertained for 6 hours
in a car?
Look
out the window.
Do it like we did it. Punch each other.
Oh, okay.
Like when I was a kid, it was just punching each other in the back seat. There were seven of us in like a Crown Victoria that was given to my dad. Like, it was just like an old beat up Crown Victoria. So here's what it was. The back seat of the car was my older brother at one point. I guess he was like 14. Then my other brother was 13. And then it was my sister. And then my baby sister, who was in a car seat, all in the back. And I sat right. What is it called? They call it riding bitch in the front.
Yeah.
The front middle, I used to sit, and that was for like a 7 hour trip to Myrtle Beach.
Man.
Yeah. When we had a station wagon with wood paneling, you can see it if you go to my Instagram account. And I was an only child, and my mom was afraid to fly at the time, so we would drive to Florida, and I used to play a game. Imagine this, how lucky my parents were. I used to play a game with a blanket in the back of the station wagon about how long I could keep quiet. And it was on my own. But that's where I heard Richard Pryor records, Steve Martin records. Like, my parents were just like, get any tapes you want. So I had like Live on Sunset Strip, Richard Pryor.
Oh, how old are you?
I guess six.
Oh my God.
Word.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's like scorched earth stuff.
you know?
From Richard Pryor, live on the Sunset Strip.
By the way,
I think the N-word's used a million times.
Oh, jeez, man.
Well, I wasn't dumb enough to run around saying it.
Of course. No, but I mean, you're 6 years old listening to that.
My parents were like, hey, if it keeps you happy. I said, I like the comedy.
By the way, the guy on the phone is right. I don't know if you want to take him, but he dislocated his ankle and popped it back in. I saw a guy last night dislocate his shoulder.
We're not going to do a crossover. Which is a shame. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, you guys are talking about Tony Finau and how that couldn't have hurt him all that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was in a scramble a couple years ago, and chest bumped my buddy, came down the same exact way, completely ruptured my Achilles. Sounded like a gunshot went off.
Wait, so you landed on the side of your foot, and that ruptured your Achilles?
Yep. It sounded like a gunshot went off. I felt it immediately. It felt like jelly. It was gone.
You jumped and landed. Okay, let me get this straight. You landed on the side of your foot.
On the side, yeah. On the side of my foot, on like the side of a hill. We were like chest
bumping.
Okay,
on the side of a hill, and then you rolled it. See, it's much more than what happened to that guy.
Well, he popped it. I dislocated it, and then popped it back in.
Well, he said he ruptured his Achilles.
No. I'm saying the guy who's playing golf, the one we were talking about, he dislocated his ankle.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Well, he's
and
a
pussy.
Popped it back in. Dude, that's pain.
That.
So yesterday,
I just sprained it.
No, yesterday I'm playing in this like charity basketball game. It's like a tournament thing, and this guy was reaching
like
in for a ball.
Not good,
dude. I'm awful. So this guy like reached in and tried to block a guy who was coming down the lane, and he dislocated his shoulder. And I heard him scream, and the guy hit the ground. And so he's sitting there shaking. He goes, I know it. I dislocated it. I've done it before about 4 years ago.
Did he hit it against the wall?
Did he do a Mel Gibson?
So one of the guys there was a doctor. And he goes, he walks up to him, and he goes, you want me to pop it back in? And I was like, oh, here we go. And he goes, all right, let's try it. So he goes, all right, I need somebody to hold this guy. I'm like, me. I want to be the guy. So I walk up to the dude. And he goes, the doctor goes, okay, I need you to reach around him. And when I tell you to, pull back away from me. So he grabs the guy's arm. All the dudes in the basketball court are all coming around. It's like, 15 people. They're all watching. And he's like taking his arm. He goes, I want you to relax your muscles. Relax your muscles. I want you to just don't think about anything else. Just keep it relaxed. And then he mouths to me. He goes, 1, 2, 3. And I pull and he jams. And the guy goes, ah!
That doesn't hurt.
And he goes, did it work? No!
Dude, I had my friend's stoner brother.
You said the guy was a doctor?
Oh, yeah, he was a doctor. They eventually got him on this mat, and they took this towel, and they wrapped it around it, and did this crazy ninja move, and they got it back in eventually.
Jeez.
But that first time was just a strikeout. First of all, dislocating
your shoulder, I mean, that's defense. I mean, basketball is a contact sport. You got to put your shoulder down, and you got to run through that. You got to be able to take that pain, and you got to fall on that too. Try to draw the charge.
Sure.
But I will. I had my friend's stoner older brother, like from a first marriage, that used to put a keg in the back of his car and put the line around and drink it, like in his vet, or not vet, in his like Roadrunner. And he popped my nose back into place. My friend threw a pool ball at my face, and it broke my nose. And I let that Hesher bop it back into place.
That was the most gnarly thing.
It is a little like mine, a little crooked. Yep.
Yeah, it's been broken 100,000 times.
Yeah.
Because every stupid fight I lost, the gun hit me in the nose.
Yep.
Oh, that was, I'll hear that guy scream. Just like, and I'm standing right next to him and I'm pulling. I'm like, ah!
Where was this? Was this like the garden?
No. It's like a charity thing. It's like raising money for, the school. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. Did you get the heebie-jeebies? Did you have, trouble shooting?
They're like 8-foot rims.
Eight and a half.
No, so you can dunk. You can dunk. It's awesome. It's actually kind of fun. It's 4-on-4.
Because every time I play against adults now, which is not often, but I get the yips right away. Like, not as bad as baseball, but I'll get the yips with jump. So I have to keep shooting jump shots until I get comfortable.
Yep.
So like the first two, I'll go like clank off the backboard.
Mm-hmm.
And then I gotta get it under control.
I'm one of the shortest guys in this league. Like for some reason, everybody who's playing in this is like over 6 feet tall.
Yeah, you're 6'1", right?
Yeah, I'm 6 foot. And like everyone there is like taller than me almost.
One of the guys that I play against is 6'9".
And he
played
Chara.
He played at Union. But, I mean, because he's 6'9". But, yeah, I can't guard him. But that's the show.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Now, we got to skedaddle.
Mm-hmm.
Have fun at the game today, guys.
Yeah, the big opener, baby.
Enjoy Ruth Pointer.
Okay. One-third of the Pointer Sisters.
That's right.
Zolak and Bertrand will be at Lucky Strike. Rich and I will eventually be there as well. And maybe I'll do my annual tradition of getting drunk and going on the air with them.
Perfect.
But I'm not going to get there in time probably to be drunk. But if you're at the game, we will see you. We're in section 101. So come on down.